Hello, listeners. I know you've heard Elise and I talk about our new Patreon podcast, Still Wondering, but we wanted to give you all another sample here of what we're doing there. So, we're going to share with you the first episode of our coverage of You've Got Mail. It covers roughly the first fourth of the movie, so nothing too spoilery for those who haven't seen it already. We hope you enjoy. Welcome to part one of Still Wondering, You've Got Mail. Well, hello, Elise Castle.
Hey there, Mike Jensen.
We're back for, I guess this is episode two, if all goes as planned.
I guess it's like volume two, episode one.
Sure, that makes more sense. Yeah. Volume two, episode one.
Because this may actually be episode five or maybe episode seven. You know, we don't really...
That is true.
We don't know.
That is true. And, you know, we didn't stray that far for our second film.
We chose
these as back-to-back to kind of point out some of the themes that we are going to develop here. And so we're sticking with Meg Ryan. Of course, we're sticking in New York because that's the whole premise of at least this first season of what we're doing.
We're sticking to the Upper West Side and we're sticking to Nora Ephron.
Yeah, so we've got You've Got Mail.
Which already is kind of dated itself, kind of has dated itself. Like if I were to say You've Got Mail to a Gen Z person, they would immediately just think it was about an actual mailbox. They don't understand that You've Got Mail.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, we'll talk about it as we go along, but this film was so timely, like so of a moment and like really in the zeitgeist of what was happening right then with chat rooms and even like the novelty of email. Like this was right at the beginning, all of that. And, you know, it stayed relevant for a while, but I certainly know people who, A, weren't born when this film came out, so wouldn't be at all aware of what the technology was. And even some of it for me, I'm like, wait, how did that work? So I think we'll dive kind of more into that, I think, as we go along. So You've Got Mail. It's written by Delia and Nora Ephron. And I say Ephron because it's an O-N. She tends to just say Ephron.
Okay.
When she says, so I was like, oh, is it Ephron? Okay, sure, Ephron. Yeah, so there you go. Directed by Nora Ephron. This is originally based on a play that translated into English would be Parfumerie by Miklos Laszlos. And then, of course, it was made into a film called The Little Shop Around the Corner or Little Shop Around the Corner. And then, of course, it was two different musicals. It was a movie musical called In the Good Old Summertime. Am I saying that right?
I'm unfamiliar with that.
Judy Garland, Van Johnson, a movie musical from 1949. And then, I suppose, better known as She Loves Me as musical form.
Yeah.
Though I didn't realize that when She Loves Me first came out, it was not a hit.
I am not the hugest She Loves Me fan. Did you see the most recent revival?
That's the only one that I know. I saw the one that was done just by Roundabout with Laura Benanti and Jane Krakowski.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
Zachary Levi.
I really enjoyed that production. I'm just saying, in general, the show for me, like, I think a lot of it's kind of the same as The Fantastics is for me, where a lot of people who love it, they're like, oh, it's just the perfect, you know, sweet. They often say it's like, oh, it's just a sweet show or it's a beautiful show. And it's just not something that I'm ever really. Like, I can't wait to see another production of She Loves Me.
Kind of same. And I have friends that will be mad at me for this because I do have friends that really, really love it. I think for me also, I'm just not really an old-fashioned musical guy. I've said this before. Like, if you came out before Les Mis, I probably don't know very much about it. Except for, you know, you have the certain ones.
Yeah, you love
the
Sondheims Fiddler.
And the Fiddler. Oh, gosh. Love it. Fiddler. As a four-year-old would watch that 3.5-hour movie.
Cabaret. Like, yes, there's shows that I actually do love a lot of older stuff. It's just She Loves Me. I don't know if she loves it.
Fair enough.
But I do like You've Got Mail.
I love You've Got Mail. So that's another thing about this one, as opposed to When Harry Met Sally. When Harry Met Sally is a film that before we covered it, I think I'd seen it one time at like 1 a.m. Like it was not a film that I was very familiar with. This was such a weird one to watch because I watched this movie so many times when it first came out, particularly when it first came out on DVD, because of course I already owned this DVD. Mm. And I've watched it over and over to the point that, like, when I first moved to New York, I was obsessed with the Upper West Side. And I, within a year of living here, well, a little over a year of living here, I started working on the Upper West Side and then worked on the Upper West Side for, like, 20 years of my life. And so it feels a little bit different now than it did when I would watch this movie. But there's so many things. I guess part of my point is I haven't watched this DVD in a very long time. So it was all familiar, but like felt from another life sort of watching it now.
Kind of similar here because I was saying how I don't know why I have this part of my brain, I was just talking about this last night, that these Nora Ephron movies, in particular this one, because it's 10 years, almost 10 years after When Harry Met Sally, all have the same kind of look when it comes to the decor of the apartments. It's a lot of that Pottery Barn overstuffed chair and couch look. It looks very cozy. And I have this longing to have an apartment that kind of looks like that in many ways. The Starbucks, the Pottery Barn, the bookstores, yeah. The fall, like all of that to me symbolizes that I've made it for some reason. And I don't know where that came from. And maybe it was, I did see this movie for the first time when it came out. I haven't watched it many times since, but I too, it was comfort, you know, a lot of this was comfort.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard Nora Ephron films described as, I'm going to probably use the wrong term, but like home decor porn. Mm. Like it's all just like everything's so perfect and pretty and beautiful. And yeah, you know, it's sort of her aesthetic.
A lot of bottled water.
Well, now that we've introduced it with When Harry Met Sally, we get bottled water. Yeah.
Everywhere.
So I guess I'll do my DVD. Now that's a new thing now that we're going to do the DVD description here.
It's a new thing that we've been doing ever since the beginning of our podcast.
Ever since a week ago.
Every episode of We Couldn't Help But Wonder.
So I will say there's a blurb at the top that says, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan should win the Nobel Prize for Chemistry. Ooh. I'm not sure that this reporter knows what that is actually for, but it's clever. And then we have You've Got Mail delivers all the wit, charm, and warmth you'd expect from a reunion of the stars, Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, and director Nora Ephron of Sleepless in Seattle. Greg Kinnear, Parker Posey, Gene Stapleton, and more talented co-stars add perfect support to this Valentine to modern and modem romance, in which superstore book chain magnate Hanks and cozy children's bookshop owner Ryan are anonymous email cyber pals who fall head over laptops in love, unaware that they are combative business rivals. You've got rare Hollywood magic when you've got mail.
Ooh.
So there we go. You know, I don't have a lot of development on this. I know that I did listen to the commentary on the DVD because there's commentary from Nora and from one of the producers. I think the main producer, Lauren Shuler Donner, is her name. And my understanding, they don't really get into it, but from like little hints they dropped, it seemed like this producer was looking for old ideas to remake. Specifically, like, what are things that were sort of like in the vault that were owned by Warner Brothers that they could bring out and give a modern spin to? And that it was sort of like when she decided on this, the idea was like, well, how would you do it? Because it's based on people exchanging actual mail, which certainly people do still write letters, but it wouldn't really work the same way. And I guess the other thing about having never seen the play, nor have I seen the film, the Jimmy Stewart film, I guess they all kind of take place in the store. Like everything is like a one location. And then I think it was between her and Nora and Delia, who's, you know, Nora's sister and the co-writer of this film, that they kind of figured like, okay, well, if it's a bookstore, if that's what the shop is going to be, and we make it a kid's bookstore in particular, because there is a lot that we're going to get into about the books that you read as a child and how books as a child change who you are. They are part of your soul. And that if there really was the thing happening in this moment where the big bookstores were coming along and closing down small bookstores. So the idea was like, what if we have this woman who has this small bookstore, and then we have, you know, the bad guy ostensibly who's coming in to potentially shut her down. And that immediately we've opened up from one location. Like we're going to have multiple places that we can film things to make it a little bit bigger. And, you know, I think it's a beautifully done film. I think they do a great job. And it's, you know, we start with the Warner Brothers logo that turns into a computer icon. And it's also funny how I do remember this all felt very cutting edge when it first came out.
Yeah. And the modem dialing that you hear right away.
Yes. That noise. Goodness gracious. That takes me back.
And I don't know, did you have a separate phone line for your internet?
Nope.
Yeah, so we didn't either.
Someone picked up a phone.
It was like, yeah,
100%.
You're like, Mom, I'm online.
Like I said that I was on the computer. That's so true.
And you had to really like, you had to strategically plan it. It was, you know, can I go online? I remember saying that. Like, can I go online? And my mom would say, no, I'm expecting a call, or yeah, for 20 minutes. And then like after 8 or so, it was kind of whatever, you can go online for, you know, till 9. It wasn't a big deal, but yeah, there was That was a
different
big deal.
World.
And then, yeah, I like how they, it's like a 1998 version of Google Maps, what they're doing with this opening sequence.
Yeah, I think it's actually very specifically Windows 95.
Oh.
Is what I, which once again, I remember Windows 95.
Yeah, Windows 95 came with that encyclopedia. It came with these like specific DVDs that you could only use for Windows 95. There's a dinosaur one where you would travel yep. through these dinosaurs. There was Encyclopedia
sure.
Britannica maybe or something.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So we have a floating planet that sort of takes us to the outline of Manhattan. It is pointed out that the island of Manhattan is the only landmass on this planet, which is kind of a nod to those of us that live in Manhattan. And we kind of can tend to feel that way.
Right.
That we are the only place on the planet. And as we turns into the city sort of arises, and we float over Midtown until we get to the Upper West Side, and we float up Broadway and take a left on 78th.
Mm.
That's according to where we turn on the map. Apparently, this exterior is actually on West 89th.
Okay.
But yeah, we're theoretically on 78th Street into a second story window. Once again, not familiar with it, but I think what I understand is there's a very similar, they do a dissolve where like the camera's going up to the tree. And then as we go through the tree, we're no longer on a street anymore. We're now going to go into a set. And this is a nod, I believe, to the film Shop Around the Corner that they did a similar thing with. And it's funny to digress a bit. And I remember watching Citizen Kane and thinking like, what's the big deal with this? Like everyone's so obsessed with this film. And then you get into the details of like, well, this shot seems really easy now, but to do this at a certain time, it required all these other things that had to go into it. So it's so funny looking at this shot where a camera goes through a window and then kind of looks around an apartment. Cause watching that with a modern eye, you're like, yeah, I just went into the apartment and then go like, why is it that big of a deal? But Nora talks about the fact that like this was a set and the camera had to go through that window. And then as soon as it hits the window, that wall was like moved aside so that people could go into the apartment and then continue moving the camera around. So you don't think about those little things that go into making these movies.
I don't.
That's all.
No, you're right. I don't. And sometimes, like hearing you talk about it, I'm like, well, then why would they do all that for just that moment? But then you think about it, and if they didn't, it would look like the movies I made in high school with my friends.
Right. I mean, that is sort of what differentiates it, is that you put in all these little things that no one's ever even going to know or care or hear about unless they listen to your commentary on the DVD. Mm-hmm. And we get to a sleeping Meg Ryan, and Greg Kinnear enters.
Yeah, Meg Ryan loves a floral bed set. I noticed that right away. She loved it in When Harry Met Sally. She loves it here. Greg Kinnear, I know mostly as the original host of Talk Soup on E!
That's really funny. That's because I was going to go right to his film career, but I 100%, that's how I originally knew him was
Talk Soup. Is that what he started really doing?
I believe that was his big break. I think that he was the original host of that program.
Yeah.
And then, you know, started making a name for himself in films. Academy Award nominated for As Good As It Gets. And, you know, they do talk about his casting in this, that they had, he had talks with them about the character because he didn't want to come along and just be like the boring dude who eventually gets dumped. And in fact, we'll get to it eventually. But it was his idea that he should be the one that breaks up with her. Like, just so that this character had some kind of like agency, which I think is, I can see how this could be a very, very boring character. And I do think that Greg Kinnear brings a lot to it.
Yeah, I think he's great. It's funny because what I wrote was, this man looks like he would love computers, but he hates them.
Yeah, yeah. We have a whole conversation about technology and
listen to this. The entire workforce of the state of Virginia had to have solitaire removed from their computers because they hadn't done any work in 6 weeks.
That's so sad.
Do you know what this is?
No.
What we're seeing here, it's
what?
The end of Western civilization as we know it.
Oh. Hey, aren't you late?
Technology. Name me one thing, one that we've gained from technology.
Electricity.
That's one. You think this machine's your friend, but it's not.
And this was based on a real thing, that there was some state government that like had to remove all solitaire, Minesweeper, and something else like from all the computers because the people weren't getting any work done. And they were, you know, like tax paid employees who were just like playing on their computers all day.
He was giving me moderate Skipper vibes.
Sure.
From Sex and the City, but Skipper would have loved a computer and would have supported it.
Yeah, and it like, name one thing that technology has done. And I think she says electricity. He's like, that's one. You thought of one thing. I'm like, well, I can think of other things. I have a few issues with him as we go along in this show.
My next line was, not a fan of him.
Yeah. And, you know, if, once again, they talk about how they do try to set up fairly quickly that he's not a bad guy, But he doesn't listen to her.
No, and like, he's
he
a Luddite.
He does not listen when she talks. Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, as soon as he leaves, she gets very excited and secretive.
Right, and she's making sure he left. Because, once again, going on the internet was a thing. It's not like now where she could have been emailing this man back while she's on her phone talking to him. You had to have a reason to go online for the most part.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely a very, you had a task to do. And yeah, she goes her computer to AOL and we have a dial up and we see a correspondence between NY152 and ShopGirl. And now ShopGirl was already a used address. It belonged to a woman who apparently worked at an auto body shop. That was the shop of ShopGirl, and they basically had to reach out and be like, listen, we're gonna have this character, it's gonna be their email address, you're not gonna want it anymore. And so they just sort of convinced her to give them the ShopGirl domain name.
Why couldn't they just change it?
I guess that they just really wanted ShopGirl. You think they could, like, ShopGal?
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, ShopGal or like ShopBitch.
this can be our first sort of like Sex in the City bridge, because wasn't Carrie Bradshaw ShoeGal?
Yeah, she was ShoeGal. They could have made her like Meg Ryan, would have been big tool for you.
Perfect. Yeah, and we have a guy talking about his dog, and this is, we're at Tom Hanks' apartment. His name, we'll learn, is Joe Fox.
His dog is Brinkley. Big fan of Brinkley.
Brinkley's very cute. Brinkley was played by more than one dog, and if you watch carefully, one dog is a little bit bigger than the other, but one dog did certain things better than the other, so they had
we
to switch them back and forth.
We don't size shame here.
I wasn't shaming. I was just saying they were different sizes.
Okay.
I was embracing the size difference.
Yeah, and Joe/Tom is pouring his morning OJ, which I feel like is a thing only adults do on TV.
100%. I mean, I'm trying to think last time I like poured myself a glass of juice that didn't involve vodka and soda.
Right, like, and it's always in a aesthetically pleasing container.
And that's a lot of orange juice.
Do you know how much sugar is in that, Joe?
And Parker Posey enters frantically. This is Patricia Eden is the character's name. And Parker Posey was basically an indie darling at the time. My understanding, this was her first like major film.
Yeah, she broke out with that film Party Girl in Sundance.
Party Girl.
I mean, and yeah. I mostly know her from Waiting for Guffman and Best
so
in Show.
Good.
And like,
so good, yeah.
As Libby May Brown.
Yeah, she'd already done
Waiting for Guffman.
I think she'd already done House of Yes, which is another film that I was a little obsessed with her, but it might be right around this same time.
And before she comes in, there's this line that it's just kind of iconic to the movie where he says, "Don't you love New York in the fall? It makes me want to buy school supplies."
I think of this line all the time. I would bring you a bouquet of sharpened pencils.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing that actually makes complete sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I love it. It's so good. This script is so beautiful. And we have a sort of a similar sneakiness when he is now alone. Mm-hmm. And I guess once again, it just harkened back to like, I guess if someone was like, what are you doing online? You'd have to actually give them a reason. Unlike now, and you're like, we're online all the time.
And he checks his email. You've got mail. And he has three emails, one about earning cash fast, one about learning Latin while you sleep, and the other one from ShopGirl, captioned Dear Friend, which yeah. I don't know the play or the book that this is based off of, but in She Loves Me, every letter they write is also titled Dear Friend.
Good catch. We earn fast cash. I actually wrote these down because earn fast cash comes from
big box.
The S is a dollar sign. Yeah. At usenet.com. And then learn Latin while you sleep is from arlmax at langnet.org.
Interesting.
Okay, so now we're going to try to cover the address as quickly as possible, because my experience with this address on Riverside Drive has been 20 something years in the making.
Uh-oh.
And I at many point thought that I had solved this. I literally had sent you a message being like, just text me whenever you're ready, we'll get started. And then had to rescind that text because I received new information that I then had to go and look up and see what this was. So NY152, we're going to learn, is based on his address, 152 Riverside Drive. Should surprise no one to know that there is no such thing as 152 Riverside
Drive.
Right,
I knew
this. That's not a real address. Yeah. So I was certain. I wrote, this is notes from before, where I'm writing, I'm guessing it's 155, which is on 88th Street. This is also known as the Will and Grace building.
Okay.
But then the way that the camera turned as he exited, I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. We're looking the wrong way down the street. So maybe it's the apartment right across the street, 160 Riverside Drive, which, funny enough, is the Liz Lemon apartment from 30 Rock. So Will and Grace and Liz Lemon lived across the street from each other. Still 88th Street. Okay, then just out of nowhere randomly, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do a little more research. Let me look up some stuff here. And I see this thing talking about how the exteriors for his apartment were filmed at 210 Riverside Drive. And I'm like, 210? That's not even anywhere near where I thought this was. And also, I look at a picture of it, and there's no awning. There's no green awning at all.
They made the awning for the movie.
They made the awning for the film. Like, how did it take me all of this time to find that out? So yeah, there we go. We're actually further up than I thought. So we're actually on 93rd Street. The other weird thing about this is I don't even think this is the actual entrance to the building. I think this is like a side entrance.
The service entrance.
That they just used for the film. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, there was my far too lengthy experience trying to figure out where this address was that you apparently already knew.
That's okay, because they're playing Dreams by the Cranberries. I love this song.
Yeah, it's a great song.
So I do not own this DVD, so I rented it on Amazon, and when you rent movies through Prime, every time you pause them, it shows you the picture and the actor who's in the scene, and then if the music is playing, it tells you what the song is. So that's fun.
Yeah, music is a pretty big part of this film. It was a pretty major soundtrack. A lot of Harry Nilsson.
Right. The puppy song by Harry Nilsson was the first Harry Nilsson we heard.
Yes, and there'll be four altogether. Mm-hmm. So we basically see them walking near each other on West End Avenue. We're going to have a lot of Upper West Side. We see the 84th Street Lowe's that I think is the 84th Street AMC now.
Mm-hmm. We see a Tomcat bakery delivery.
Yeah.
Where they're dropping the paper bags in front of the restaurant filled with bread. And Mike and I used to work at a restaurant who got deliveries from Tomcat, and it looked just like that. And sometimes we would have to bring them downstairs.
100%. Reminded me.
That eyeglasses store is still there.
Yeah, that eyeglasses store is still there. That Starbucks is still there. Yeah. That's the Starbucks on 81st. I also like that when you see the Starbucks, you can see the West Sider Rare and Used Books in the background.
Which is also still there.
I do like that place. That is also still there.
That Nautica store is not there.
You know, a lot of things have changed. Yeah, a lot of things have changed, but a few have remained behind. We get them walking on either side of, I actually wrote Needle Park. I'm aware that we now are supposed to call it Verity Square, but like back in the day, that little triangle park right below the Apple Bank was referred to as Needle Park because there would be a lot of needles in it.
Oh.
It's all now called Verity Square. It's also funny to see this because when I moved to New York, it still looked like this, and right out of frame, just across Broadway, there is still a Chase Bank, which is the Chase Bank that I went to originally get a bank account in New York City. And in the lobby of that Chase Bank was a model for the new 72nd subway station that had not been built yet that will end up taking up this space. Like, that space is not really there anymore because of the modern 72nd Street subway station. Because back in the day, the old one still stands, but they built the new one and then shut the old one down because you couldn't cross between uptown and downtown at that station. I once remember getting on an uptown train, I want to say at Lincoln Center, and realizing that I left my bag behind at a restaurant, but I couldn't change to go downtown until 97th, because every other train station, you would have to like leave the station and pay to get back in again.
Wow.
Anyways, random subway facts with Mike.
But then they reopened it.
Yeah, so now both are open and you can cross from uptown to downtown on both sides. But yeah, this was just before that station started being made. I should point out that anytime you see an autumn leave, it's fake.
Okay.
Because they filmed this in the summer. So like whenever you see like anything autumnal, it was done computer generated.
Thank you for ruining the spirit of autumnal fantasy.
That's what I'm here for. Speaking of autumnal, she's buying a pumpkin from a pregnant lady. I had never noticed this lady was pregnant, but it ends up being kind of an important little mini fact.
Okay, can't wait to hear more.
It will all pay off. And then we're at a construction site. Kevin Jackson, played by Dave Chappelle. And I don't have a lot to say about Dave Chappelle.
No, I mean, I think his performance in this is great.
I think he's great in this.
I love this character.
I think he's great in this, yeah.
I love that they did not make him this over-the-top, like, you know, cracking all these jokes, like sidekick friends that would be kind of easy to do with a Dave Chappelle. You see that a lot when comedians are in, like, movies.
The funny thing with that, either because of this kind of in spite of it, apparently he did a lot of his own part writing. Like, they had written a part for him, and then he kind of was like, all right, they let him take it and kind of make it into what he thought the character would sound like, which he easily could have gone for like, let's make the silly jokes, but it all plays very like real.
Yeah,
and human.
It's nice to have that somewhat humorous personality that's not trying to be funny. But here's where we find out that they're opening a big bad chain store. It's going to have cheap books and cappuccinos.
Hey, you know what? We should announce ourselves to the neighbors. Let them know. Here we come.
Oh, no, this is Upper West Side, man. We might as well tell them we're opening a crack house. They're going to hate us. As soon as they hear, they're going to be lining up
to pick at the big bad chain store.
That's out to destroy it.
Everything they hold dear. Yeah. You know what? We are going to seduce them. We're going to seduce them with our square footage and our discounts and our deep armchairs and our cappuccino. That's right. They're going to hate us at the beginning,
but we'll get them in the air.
And you know why?
Why?
Because we're going to sell them cheap books and legal addictive stimulants.
So this was filmed at a recently closed Barney's on 7th Avenue at 17th Street.
Okay.
And this huge Barney, it's right, like, cafeteria's right there. Like, I think the buildings must be kind of new-ish because they don't really look like this anymore.
Yes, and it was, I believe this is where the Lohmans used to be.
Yes, there was a Lohmans right next to it.
So that Lohmans was where I once saw Wilson Phillips performing. Which is one of my favorite moments.
At the height of their career.
I think I've even talked about this on We Couldn't Help But Wonder, but I was walking down 7th Avenue one day, and I had headphones in, and I'm hearing, like, someday somebody's gonna... And I'm like, I mean, I know I'm in Chelsea, so it's not strange that I hear Wilson Phillips just blasting down the street, but okay. And I'm just walking, and then I see people crowded outside of Lohmann's, which I love a Lohmann's, love a discount store, RIP to Lohmann's. And I look, and Wilson Phillips is performing at Lohmann's right next to that Barney's, a.k.a. Fox Books.
Amazing.
But Fox Books was clearly based on, like, a Borders and Barnes & Noble.
It's specifically based on the Barnes & Noble that is still open at 83rd. Is that right?
Yes, Broadway 83rd. And 83rd.
That's what this was based on. And in fact, that was the Barnes & Noble that put Shakespeare & Company out of business. Shakespeare & Company that had been featured in our last movie that we covered.
When Harry Met Sally. And yeah, the shop around the corner, I heard, was based on the children's bookstore that's called, I want to say Books Are Magic, but that's not it. That's that place in Brooklyn. Books of Wonder.
Oh, yes, that sounds right. Books of Wonder.
Which I believe is still in operation.
The store was Books of Wonder in Manhattan. Yes. Mm-hmm. Also, side note, we haven't met the character yet, but Meg Ryan and Heather Burns, who we'll meet soon, they worked at that bookstore for about a week in preparation to making this film.
Method acting.
Exactly. So the other thing about this that is kind of amazing is that because they were able to find, first of all, they apparently did ask Barnes & Noble, hey, we're going to film this movie, can we? And Barnes & Noble was like, nope. was not interested in being a part of this film, which I understand. Like, I guess that I do get it. I think they were not having the best press at that time. But the fact that this Barney's had just closed, they were saying that this scene of construction having not started was one of the first things they filmed, because they're going to build a bookstore in this Barney's over the course of filming this. So when we go back and see it, they've built a bookstore in that space. And in fact, this is the one thing that I wasn't able to do that I really wanted to. I know this neighborhood pretty well. I've walked by right where this is so many times. I think that that staircase, that spiral staircase, I think is still there. Like, I think that that's still part of the structure, but I don't know that for sure. So that'll have to be a follow-up there. And then Tom Hanks has his line about legal addictive stimulants, referring to, like, Starbucks coffee, yeah, and they use the term or not. But apparently that is a term that he made up while they were filming Sleepers in Seattle, where Tom Hanks became addicted to Starbucks coffee.
Oh, wow.
So this is actually kind of a throwback to them doing Sleepers in Seattle before. And then now we're at the little shop around the corner.
Yes, Meg Ryan arrives to work at an idyllic-like bookstore with a pumpkin. How much more perfect fall can you get?
Exactly. And this, you know, this was Maya Shaper's Antiques and Cheeses on 69th Street. It was still that up until just a few years ago. Or I guess it was a few years ago now.
No, I remember that. I hope the cheese is an antique.
Yeah, I don't think so. I did read a little bit about what the antiques were, mostly like little things, and then it was a cheese shop.
Okay.
And I never went in when it was a cheese shop. You know, I walked by it often. And connection to Sex and the City Part 2, this is the store in which Carrie ran into Aiden when Aiden had the little baby strapped to his front.
Tater Tot.
Yeah, this is exactly where that was filmed. There's like the Little Citan was, oh, I said that real French.
Oh, yeah. Oui, oui, Mike Jensen. Mike Jensen.
And that's not there anymore, but that was also there for a very, very long time.
Wait, Nice Matan isn't there anymore?
L'Occitane.
Oh, I thought you said Nice Matan.
No, not Nice Matan. I'm saying I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
Now we just sound like New York know-it-alls.
Exactly. Also, random story. Apparently, Nora Ephron got her first big break writing for a magazine that was run out of this before it was an antique and cheese shop. There was a magazine that was run out of there that she got her first writing job in. And in fact, the man who ran that magazine and gave her her first job is the man who Frank's character is named after. That he's Greg Kinnear's character of Frank is sort of based on this man who I believe as of the filming of this was now working at the Village Voice. But once again, I might be misquoting that. But yeah, so there you go. Another random little connection to this spot here. So now we're going to meet Christina, played by Heather Burns. And, I was mostly trying to look at what people had done before this. And this was her first feature film. Mm. Like, she'd done some TV work and done a short. But this was the very beginning of her feature film career.
Welcome.
Yeah. And I really love her. Like, I remember seeing her in this and thinking, I kind of want to hang out with you. Like, she just seems like a cool girl. I enjoy her.
Yeah, and they're talking about Meg's internet experience. She's talking about how she met this man in a chat room, and I was just thinking to myself, are there chat rooms anymore? I mean, I'm sure there are, but that mystery, that anonymity is no longer there. I mean, I guess that's not true, because you watch Catfish on MTV, and Neve is always like, have you seen a picture? And they're like, no, his camera's broken. So I guess there still can be that. But
it still exists. I just think that there was a novelty to it at the time. Like, I remember going to chat rooms when I was, it was when I first moved to New York, probably more, which feels so weird now that, like, I would have conversations with people. It never worked out for me. I could never do the online thing, because usually within like four exchanges, they'd be like, you seem really mean. And I'd be like, oh, I was being funny.
Yeah.
So the online thing didn't really work out for me.
Well, the thing about,
I'm too caustic.
And I always give this advice to anyone who is dating online, just because the relationship I'm in currently, I like met the person on a dating app. Like, if you're talking to the person, you're enjoying the conversation, just give it like a 5 to 10, maybe like after 10 minutes, try to set a time to meet the person for a coffee, like, or a drink, whatever it is. And like, be safe about everything. I've said this many times, everyone always knew where I was going and the person's phone number, but because you can get locked up in this romantic idea of who this person
is. For sure. Yeah, 100%.
Now, this also could, if maybe though, never mind. I mean, going down, I'm going to say how I'm glad that these two people didn't do that, because this story wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I do. I want to point out the set. So we are on a set. I think that there was something that I read somewhere they had like redone. They redid part of the antique shop, but I think just the very, very beginning. So whenever we're looking from the outside, obviously it's the antique shop. And as soon as we go in, we're now on a set. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of designed to look like the bookshop that you mentioned earlier, and another bookshop that Nora Ephron had loved on the Upper East Side, mixed with just like her idea of what a bookshop would look like.
I wonder if the store that Nora Ephron likes on the Upper East Side is called the Corner Bookstore.
That, I think that is right. That sounds right to me.
Because yesterday I was walking around my neighborhood and I was trying to see if the new Barnes & Noble was open, and it wasn't, but it said the Corner Bookstore, and I walked there. I went there because I had never been there. I had heard about it. It's on 92nd and Madison, and there's not very many like cute, tiny bookstores like that anymore, and I was just inspired to go there. So that's cool. I'm glad I went. It's really, I mean, if you're ever on the Upper East Side, it's the size of my apartment, which is very small, and that gives you the idea of how the bookstore is. But stores like that that are small, they have a much more curated selection.
For sure.
Titles.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and part of the set design is this, that you see when she's behind the counter that there are all those like sort of like dolls mm-hmm. behind her. And this was sort of to give us the knowledge that the store is already changing, that they've already started to adapt to the new way that bookstores are having to sell other things. Yeah, exactly. And she, you know, she redoes the Don't You Just Love New York in the Fall, and Christina's wondering if she's in love. And I do think that she has the question of, can infidelity happen online? Yes, infidelity can happen online. That's a crazy thing to ask.
Not in 1998, though, people didn't
and
know.
And I guess that's right. I guess in 1998, mm-hmm. it was sort of like, wait, what are the rules here? And they met in an over 30 chat room on her birthday that she mostly went to as a joke.
Sure. Hilarious.
And then George enters, and we have Steve Zahn, who I'm trying to think of at this point. Oh, I would have known him at this point for Reality Bites.
Okay.
A film I don't particularly care for, but he's very funny in that film. And he'd done an episode of Friends at this point. He'd done That Thing You Do, which is a film that I've still never seen. Mm. Sorry, Tom.
I don't know if I ever saw it either. We should watch it. Yeah, and the thing that caught my eye about George is that he's also a little bit kind of like has no opinions on the internet, and once again looks like a person that would totally be on the internet.
Yeah, I can see that.
Morning.
Are you online?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the internet is just another way of being rejected by a woman.
And that's our first episode of You've Got Mail. We hope you enjoyed, and if you want to hear more like our full coverage of When Harry Met Sally, head on over to Patreon, or you can find a super easy link on our website, wecouldn'thelpbutwonder.com. We'll continue with new episodes of We Couldn't Help But Wonder on Sundays, and episodes of the Patreon series drop on Wednesdays, so either way, we'll be back soon. Oh gosh, now I have to make sure that I'm saying it right. I think it was a Judy Garland movie musical.
Oh no, I'm gonna get hate mail.
I know, you're gonna get in so much trouble. Heather's wondering if... Christina's wondering if she's in love. And I do think that she has the question.